The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 111 for July 16th, 2007. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I, of course, am Dave Hamilton. I am proud to be back here with John Braun. How are you, John?
You're back. Welcome back.
Yeah, you know, speaking of welcome back, we're going to start the show with a rant here. I've just decided.
Oh, you got one too.
Oh, yeah. Look, so, you know, we were away last week, and so I get back on Saturday, and Lisa, we're in the house getting things unpacked, and Lisa picks up the phone, and it's dead. And she's like, the phone's dead. Like, okay. So I check the computers in the house, no internet connection. Okay.
Now you have Vonage,
that's right. Yeah.
VoIP? All right, so you have a VoIP, not a hardwired phone.
Right.
Okay.
So I head over here to the office. Internet's fine here. I know what's happened. The frickin' lightning again, right? Now, for those of you that have been listening to the show for 2 years now, you remember that this is not the first time this has happened. In fact, it's now the third time this has happened. The second time it happened, I got smart, and I went around, and every device that was connected, there's a cable that runs between a series of cables, four cables, actually, that run between the office and the house. They're buried underground, and they're not in a conduit. This is the previous owner of the house that did this. So if you're ever going to bury cable, so yeah, this rant is not without substance. If you're ever going to bury cable, you know, you got to do it in a conduit, because otherwise things like this happen. But anyway, I'm not going to rip it up. Easier for me to just protect everything on both ends. So initially when we moved in, we weren't using Vonage, which meant that the phone line for the – actually, we were using it in the office but not in the house, which meant the phone line for the house just came into the house, and that was fine. So we were only using one of the Cat 5 connections that goes between the office and the house. We were using it for networking, obviously. And so what I had to do was on either end, I had to put an Ethernet surge protector and then plug the device to which the cable was connected also into an AC, a power line surge suppressor, because DC devices are the things that are going to die first. Okay. So you got to protect both ends of it. Well, we did that and that was fine. Survived many a lightning storm, no problem. Well, then we decided to nix the regular Verizon line, which was our landline in the house, because they were charging us like $65 a month or something for the unlimited calling plan, and we knew we could do it with Vonage for another $25. And so we nixed that and got another line on the Vonage thing, and we have this extra Cat 5 that goes back and forth, so we use a single pair on that to send the line back to the house. Good to go. What did Dave forget to do in this equation? Yep, you guessed it. I forgot to protect both ends of this second Cat 5. And then I'd put a switch up in the attic where the other Cat 5 comes in for the networking. And though I had protected the Ethernet side of it, I had simply plugged it into the wall for power. Bad move. Need to plug it into a surge protector, because what happens when a spike comes in through the power in the wall? It goes for the DC jack on the DC jack being the low voltage stuff, the Ethernet, and blows up all the Ethernet and the switch. So the switch in the attic blew up. That's why we didn't have internet in the house. And then, of course, the Vonage line, not the Vonage line, but just the line running between the house and the office for the phone blew up. Thankfully, it didn't blow up anything in the house. It blew up the Vonage terminal adapter, which is the thing that provides us with both phone lines, connects the phone lines to the internet, and makes all that magic work. And then, of course, it blew up my telephone in the office, which is an old Siemens Gigaset 2420, great two-line phone system. There's nothing that I've found that is as feature-rich as this. But, of course, it's not made anymore, so they're tough to repair and tough to find. And thankfully, I found one on eBay, so I replaced that. My son and I drove out Sunday morning down to Circuit City, bought a new Vonage adapter, plugged it in. Called up the folks at Vonage. They swapped it around. They were actually really nice. They gave me a $40 credit. Why, I don't know. It was out of warranty. They didn't need to, but they did. And so, you know, everything was fine. And then like I stacked the old Vonage router on top of my Linksys, you know, wireless router that I have in the office, the WRT54GS. And about an hour later, the phone stopped working again. It's like, what the heck? And I go over and I touch the Vonage router, and it's screaming hot, scorching. And sure enough, the thing had overheated for whatever reason, bad manufacturing or something. And so it stopped working. So I then had to go out again, this time to Staples, because I wanted a different type of Vonage adapter. I didn't want one from the same batch that that Circuit City had gotten. And I got a new one at Staples, called the lovely folks at Vonage again. They walked me through it. They didn't give me another $40. No surprise. And now everything, you know, so far so good seems to work. I like I said, I bought another Siemens Gigaset 2420 base on eBay, which is good because it means I don't have to replace all my handsets. And once that arrives, then we'll be back in business. But, you know, it just goes to show you, if you're going to protect against lightning, you can't skip any one spot, because it is one of those weakest link in the chain sort of things. And I had a couple of weak links in the chain that I just got lazy with when, as I expanded the chain, as it were. So that's me. So our show today, though, is not about that. It's about, we've got iTunes stuff to talk about. We've got some follow-up on cloning images, and then we've got some iPhone tips, and then some new questions and all that.
Phones. I got to rant, and, you know, it's not a matter of if I'm going to rant.
Right.
It's a matter of when.
All right. Well, maybe we'll split the rants up just to give people time to digest, perhaps.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Actually, while you were away, I went to this very nice show, and I'll mention two cool little things I just saw.
Mm-hmm.
But Digital Life. Now, unfortunately, the real Digital Life show, which they usually have in the Javits Center in New York City, unfortunately, is during the podcast show that you and I are going to.
Yep.
But this was like the pre-event here.
Okay.
So it was cool. All the local area journalists here. Of course, there were a couple of guys that had already gotten an iPhone. And, you know, they were the alpha journalist, as you were.
Right, that's
there.
Right.
But two cool things that I saw very quickly, just, you know, that jumped out at me and I hadn't really seen before. So one was a thing, you know how the kids are glued to the, you know, the video game or the TV or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
This is something that I think could replace parenting, or at least complement parenting when you're just tired of it all. And it's usebob.com. It's actually the company, let's see, who is it here? Hopscotch. But anyways, it's a little electrical thing that basically just shuts the power off to something. So you put the cord in this, you lock it up, and then you program it to shut things off at a certain time. So, you know, if 9 o'clock is when video games are off, then it turns it off.
Oh, interesting.
I thought that was pretty neat for kids.
Now, the URL is usebob.com. So this is not related to the Microsoft Bob, which is something that no one used, right?
Well, it was a comical, you know, approach at a user interface. It was too cartoon-like, I think. But actually, yeah, it redirects to hopscotchtechnology.com.
Okay.
But I thought it was cool. Now, of course, as a young geek, what I would do is if I saw one of these devices, I would cut the power cord and solder a new end onto it, which is basically the only way you're going to get around this.
Kids these days, though, they don't – I mean, well, actually, I say this, and of course, my 5-year-old son and I have done soldering projects, but my guess is that most kids don't know how to solder these days.
Well, especially not a, you know, 120 line. I mean, that gets to be
Well, you wouldn't solder it while it was plugged into the wall.
Oh, I know that, but still, you'd have to have some, you know, you'd have to get the, yeah, of course not. Well, that kind of, you know, thins the gene pool.
That sure does.
If you, you know, you solder. I mean, I remember fondly, like you probably do, you know, putting the fork in the outlet or something in the outlet at one point. And I learned a great deal about electricity.
You're not supposed to stick your tongue in the outlet, though.
No, don't stick it. And so that was pretty neat. That's a neat little device that I think could help complement parenting when you just don't want to, you know, have another round with the kids. Just say, hey, 9 o'clock, it's, you know, no more video games.
Sorry.
And then the other thing, a very nice Bluetooth headset. You told me Brian, I guess, already has one of these and really likes it.
Yep.
Jawbone.com.
Yep.
So it's a Bluetooth noise-canceling headset, which I had not heard of before and had not seen. And they have very impressive demos online. But it's just like the noise-canceling headphones. I mean, there was a demo video where the guy's standing in a field, and there's one guy with a leaf blower, another with a weed whacker. And as soon as he turns on the noise canceling, it's like they're not there. It's really amazing. So I'm going to have to follow up with those guys and see if I can get one. Because I just got a new phone, which we'll talk about shortly. But it looked like a very nice Bluetooth headset. You know, and that noise cancellation technology, it just looks like a really innovative product.
So. Yeah, Brian uses his Jawbone with his iPhone. And I've talked to him on it a couple of times. And it as far as Bluetooth headsets go, it sounds great. I still don't. It still sounds like he's in a room a little bit, but but it's not. Yeah, it's not bad. Not bad at all. So, all right,
to the show.
All right. Well, we will start with Robert, and he's just going to kick it off for us here. I think. You know, it's always the first one.
Yeah, I got a question for you guys. Oh, this is Robert from the Jersey Shore, by the way. The new iTunes requires a password every single time you start up the application, and it drives me crazy because, you know, I have a Mac in my office, and I have two Macs at home, and every time I want to fire up iTunes, I have to log into my computer and type in my password, and then log into iTunes and type in my password, which means I could be typing it in 6 times a day. It sucks. It's annoying. I want it to stop. So I'm taking the password off my system, but that still means I have to type it in to use iTunes. Is there any way, please, oh please, Mike, Mighty Mac guys, please help me in finding a solution to this dilemma. It's very frustrating and a little bit silly. If it's because of the DRM tracks, I'll throw them away. Thanks.
All right. I did a little research on this. I did not know the answer, though. I had heard of people doing this, John. And as it turns out, it's an issue when you're running iTunes and you quit or perhaps even force quit mid-download. Even once the download finishes, so when you launch iTunes, it tries to start the download again. If what you're trying to download is a purchased track, either a TV show or a song, although those tend to download pretty quickly, but let's say it's a TV show or a movie, it's going to need to log into your account to do that. Now, there's two ways to solve this problem. One, first, is to make sure that you've downloaded all tracks. So you go to the store menu and choose check for purchases. If that doesn't solve it, that'll make sure you've downloaded everything and completed all the downloads. Once that's done, if it's still happening, I found a Mac OS X Hints article that basically tells you to go and delete home, so like Twiddle /music/iTunes/iTunes Music/downloads/list.plist. And that is the list of that file sometimes will persist even though you've already finished downloading things if there was a force quit or some anomaly on the way out with iTunes. So that's the that's my story. I'll link to that article. So
you call it a twiddle?
Yeah, you never heard that?
I call it a tilde
thing. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
But now to be clear, the dialogue that was coming up, just to be perfectly clear, was the iTunes authorized dialogue. Just to be clear, because it sounds like he was mixing two things, and I just want to be clear. So there's, of course, the username password that you use to log in OS X, but then this is something totally separate. Because I was like, I've never seen iTunes do that. So, yeah, so it's in a confused state, and it keeps asking you to log into your iTunes account.
Correct. Your iTunes store account. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, what a pain in the neck. Okay.
All right, good find. I think it was just 2 shows ago, or 2 weeks ago, 1 show ago, that we were talking about having your iTunes library spanned across multiple drives for purposes of, say, having all your music on, say, your local drive, and then movies and TV shows and that sort of thing on an external drive. And we talked about a couple of not-so-perfect solutions, and Katie from the MacCore podcast sent in this with a closer-to-perfect solution. So here you go.
Hey, John and Dave. This is Katie from the MacCore podcast. You guys are always talking about managing iTunes libraries, working with multiple libraries, having libraries that live on external hard drives, and all that other frustration with iTunes that Apple just needs to figure out a way to solve with a software update. But on a more recent episode, you were specifically talking about the problem of syncing video content to an Apple TV because video takes up so much hard drive space, it becomes a problem when you have a lot of videos on the Apple TV because that video also has to live on the hard drive of the machine that you sync to the Apple TV. Now, I have an Apple TV that I love, and it syncs up with my MacBook that only has an 80-gig internal hard drive. This summer, I've been catching up on some TV shows I missed, and at one point had nearly an entire season of a particular show that I downloaded from the iTunes Music Store that I wanted to watch on the Apple TV. Problem is, this ate up a heck of a lot of hard drive space, and I didn't want these files stored locally on my MacBook. I found a solution that works well for me. I hope some of your listeners will find it helpful, too. Now, assuming you have a more recent version of iTunes, and assuming that you have the Keep iTunes Music Folder Organized box checked in your iTunes preferences, iTunes will make a copy of any music or video that you have opened in iTunes and keep it organized in that iTunes Music Folder. Now, this is great for organization, not so great for hard drive space consumption, though. I've taken almost my entire video library of nearly 15 gigs out of iTunes and stored it on an external hard drive attached to my Mac via USB. Then, all I had to do was drag those video files into iTunes while holding down the Option key. This tells iTunes to ignore that Keep Music Folder Organized settings for only these files. Instead, iTunes simply links to the files that are on my external hard drive. Now, you can't play the files on the computer unless the external drive is attached and mounted. This isn't a problem for me because I don't want to play them on my Mac, I only want to play them on my Apple TV. So as long as the external drive is mounted when you first sync that content to the Apple TV, iTunes will also sync that video over to the Apple TV. And the even better part that surprised me is that as long as those links remain in place, even if the drive is not turned on or mounted, your Apple TV will continue to leave those video files on the Apple TV, even if that hard drive isn't there when it subsequently syncs up. So this is how I watch all of the video on my Apple TV without having it eat up hard drive space on my Mac. Now, the same process would also probably work for someone who has video libraries that they don't necessarily need constant access to and don't need to keep on their Mac, but still want to be able to manage and watch through iTunes. So anyway, hope this helps. You guys rock.
Sorry, I had that muted there, so I wouldn't make any noise. I couldn't have said it better myself. You got any thoughts there, John?
No, I agree. We rock. No, that's a good one. Now, to be clear here, I'm curious. I'm going to just ask a question here. But
yeah.
So first off, that preference is actually in the advanced general section.
Of iTunes, correct.
Of the iTunes preferences, just the steer in the right place. Now, we did notice an option here. So there's Keep iTunes Music Folder Organized, but there's also an option here, which I have checked, Copy Files to iTunes Music Folder when adding to library. And I wonder if that keyboard combo is kind of accomplishing what unchecking that would do.
I think that's exactly right. That's
great. Okay, and that's one of those kind of hidden hand wave, you know, secret handshake key.
That's right.
Key things that I guess you just come across in your travels. So, okay,
Katie, I didn't come across it in my travels. Katie came across it.
Yeah, and I guess some people, hey, you know, there's always someone out there who's just holding down the different option keys.
Oh yeah, it's
great. What they do.
Okay, so in the spirit of having you do the show, then I don't mean you, John. I mean you, our listeners. Contribute more to the show. We also stumbled onto a very popular issue, which we didn't know at the time, and that is with the fellow who got a new Mac, and it was a new MacBook Pro, third generation MacBook Pro, got it pretty much as soon as it came out, wanted to copy the data, wanted to essentially have a clone of his old MacBook Pro. Instead of using the migration assistant, he went ahead and made a clone of the drive with Super Duper. And it didn't work. The new MacBook Pro would not run would not boot properly off the drive. Okay, so with that in mind, we will have Daryl do a little bit of the show, and then we've got some comments for you.
John and Dave, this is Daryl from Texas. I got a comment about your number 110 podcast on July 2nd. You had a user call in who was surprised that he could not boot a third-generation MacBook Pro from his first-generation MacBook Pro image. That's really pretty consistent with Apple. You could go the other direction, however. If you took the third-generation MacBook Pro image, it would boot an older model. It wouldn't necessarily even have to be a MacBook Pro. I think it could boot other models. I'm in an environment where we have hundreds of computers that we purchase, Macintosh computers, and and we always maintain these images by building the image on the newest model computer. If we've got the image built on the newest model computer, we've never had any problems going backwards. However, we cannot go forwards. Anyway, there you have it. Thanks.
All right. So I actually like that policy of building the image from the newest model computer. So for those of you that are managing multiple Macs, that's why we wanted to play that, because that's not bad advice.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think I didn't run into it because I typically have both of my machines up to the latest rev of the OS.
Well, yeah, that's true.
And I'm also on a PowerPC, which I think introduces...
it just hasn't been revved in a while. There's no new PowerPCs out, right? So
Right. So everybody was saying, yeah, well, what John said is correct, but that's because he's on the PowerPC platform and not the Intel platform. The Intel platform, of course, is evolving.
Evolving, exactly.
If you're into that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Okay, so we got not one, but two email comments from, believe it or not, from Apple Techs, and they both basically said the same thing, so I'm just going to read one of them. Hi, John and Dave. I listened to Reuven's question in MacGeek Gab 110, where he copied the OS from his first-generation MacBook Pro to his new third-generation MacBook Pro, and it failed to start the Mac. While you did a very good job describing how to work around the problem, you missed describing why the copy failed. Reuven was, presumably, trying to copy his 10.4.9 installation over to a Mac that requires a newer 10.4.9 than the last general system update provided, sort of a 10.4.9.5. Because that Mac is so new, it needed extra driver code and support stuff that hadn't propagated to the general OS yet. If Reuven had installed the 10.4.10 update before copying, since that's the first general update after the new MacBook Pro's release, then the copy would likely have worked fine. Your recommendation to reinstall the MacBook with its inbox installation disk was exactly the right remedy, since that updates his OS version from the older 10.4.9 to the newer 10.4.9 that he needs. Hopefully that makes sense without needing to spend two pages talking about build sets and code conversions. And remember, regarding John's comments, that you cannot boot an Intel Mac using a PowerPC version of the macOS and vice versa. So that's the word from the horse's mouth.
Mr. X.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, well, that's too bad, because, you know, I always thought that was a... And now, that does surprise... I mean, I haven't tried it yet. I'm still, you know, one day I will get the Intel Mac. Actually, I hear rumors of a 12-inch.
Do you know?
Yeah, well, you know, the rumor mill always has to check that one out. Because I tell you, though, the newer MacBooks are pretty nice, too, but that's 13-inch, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, but I always thought that they... So I guess it sounds like in the OS they don't have a, you know, fat binary for everything. Or universal binary for everything.
Not currently. No.
Yeah, which makes sense. You don't want to waste all that space. So.
Yeah. Well, it would actually be nice.
So when
it would be nice
when
to
I
have
over...
one drive that could boot both without having to jump through all sorts of hoops, though. So let's hope they fix that at some point.
Somebody could whip that together. Yeah, they may. Or it sounds like if I get a new portable Mac, I'm going to also have to get a new desktop Mac and get rid of the other two machines.
Oh, I see. So you're just going to make the switch all at once, huh? You'll feel the pain hard, but it'll be one shot and you're done.
And the week after, they'll come out with new machines.
Naturally. Yes, of course. That's right. Yeah. And that's also the week that, you know, something will go wrong, say, where you need to, you know, spend lots of money somewhere else too. You know, house problems or car problems. I don't wish that upon you, though.
I'm not going to do it in August. August is the month where I moved into my place, and of course, that's the time that all the insurance bills come.
Oh yeah,
yeah, homeowners and all. Because you know, I did it all at the same time.
Sure.
So yeah, so I got walloped in August with initial payments. Some I got to pay in full, and some you phase in. So August is out for the upgrade. So I may wait until Macworld.
Well, there you go. Yeah, because Leopard will be out by then, and you know, life will be good. Mm-hmm. So. All right. And again, in the interest of having you do the show for us, we're going to let Doug lead us right into the next topic. A couple of things about the iPhone. You can read lots of it out there on the web. There's a couple of things that I hadn't seen anywhere, and we've got two tips for you that we're going to share. So here's Doug to start.
Hey, guys. Doug from Connecticut. How you doing? Just want to give you a quick call and give you a quick iPhone update. I got one, and I just wanted to talk for a minute about some of the data features and things like that, which a lot of users will talk about other features, and I'm more of the geeky side, so I just figured I'd touch upon those. I live in Connecticut, and I work in Meriden. I live in Bristol, and the singular service in my area is kind of bad, the AT&T service. So I'm stuck with using the Edge network, browsing the web if I don't want to use Wi-Fi or if there's no Wi-Fi available. It's slow. I haven't seen the great performance that some of the big cities are talking about, New York or California. It's bearable, you know, like the quick little maps that pop up, Google Maps, or if I check the forecast, that's relatively quick, but just web browsing can be painfully slow on the edge. So I just wanted to let your users know that. If they're not in a high content area, they might have some slow speeds. But I do have a setting on. I'm talking on it right now using my Bluetooth, so my phone quality is fine. Safari's cool. I'm sure other users have reported that. I love the way you can resize the screen. I haven't tried any SSL connections yet, but I do plan on trying to connect to my bank. I'm sure that'll be fine. I'm sure it's supported. I wanted to get into the VPN part of it and see what that's all about. We have a certain VPN configuration at my work, which I know will not be supported since it's not just a standard IPsec. It's a specific manufacturer. But I do have a VPN router that I'm going to try to connect to and just see what I can do with that. I wonder what they're planning with that. Maybe syncing over VPN or maybe syncing over wirelessly or Bluetooth. That'd be kind of cool. Just speculating, obviously. Anyways, this isn't really the best iPhone review. I'll leave that for somebody else. I love the device. I'm sure one of you guys have one by now. And I'm sure you're going to have a show devoted just to it. It's very cool. You know, Apple's got a lot of little things to fix. Totally pissed my wife off and she wants one too, but I guess that's a good thing. Anyways, guys, hopefully I'll... If you have any questions, let me know. And I'm sure other users will be reporting on iPhone specifics. Keep up the great work on the show. I'll catch you guys later. Bye-bye.
Any thoughts there, John?
Cool. Actually, you know, I would concur with that because when I was at this Digital Life event, you know, as I mentioned, a few PC World guys, I think, were there showing off their iPhones. And I tried this. The Google Maps, it was tolerable. You know, you could see it, you know, downloading the data to update the map. No, I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. Should I let loose now?
No.
Well, I got a new phone too.
Let me finish. Let's finish the iPhone thing, and then we'll give you free reign here. Because there are a couple of things. Robert wrote in, and this is disturbing, weird. In reading through the fine print in AT&T's contract that essentially you have to agree to have service on the iPhone, he found something about Wi-Fi connections that's very interesting. And that's that you're limited to 150 Wi-Fi connections per month. Now, there's not a whole lot of details on this, but presumably that means that if you're at the office and you connect to Wi-Fi and then disconnect from Wi-Fi and get home and connect to Wi-Fi, that's two connections. And that's, you know, so maybe that's, you know, 50 connections a month. And then if you drop off during the day, let's say you go out to lunch, that disconnects the Wi-Fi connection. You come back, reconnect to the Wi-Fi connection. That double, you know, that could, it doesn't make sense.
Help me out here, but I thought the Wi-Fi, you're connecting to your access point.
That's right.
With your device.
That's right.
How can they possibly dictate what network you connect the device to if it's a built-in capability of it?
They don't care what network. They just care how many times.
To a Wi-Fi network. Wait a second. Are they getting any revenue when you connect to a Wi-Fi connection?
No, I don't believe they are.
You know, I think that just answered the question.
I think you're right. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It says to ensure that the Wi-Fi service is not being used fraudulently, AT&T limits your usage of the Wi-Fi service to 150 uses per month. Fraudulently? Doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, they got to get a lawyer on that.
Yeah. So that's not the reason I don't have an iPhone. We're actually talking to Apple. They may wind up sending us one to talk about here on the show. If that happens before John or I wind up getting one, then we'll do that. Otherwise, my Trio is to the point where the battery is kind of shot, and I was thinking about replacing it anyway. But the problem is my Trio can do a couple of things that the iPhone can't. One is that my Trio syncs with Now Up to Date and Contact, which the iPhone can't. And iCal is not a calendar or to-do list or personal information manager in by any stretch of the imagination. And it also can't act as a Bluetooth modem, which I use infrequently. But when I use it, it's because that's my last resort. So I'm hesitant to take that plunge without those two things, at least those two things being fixed. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. So anyways, you know, I'm still, you know, but mine hasn't arrived yet.
Okay.
I guess it must have gotten lost in the mail or something.
I guess so, yeah.
So
but
I did,
you said you got a new phone, right?
Yes, so I got a new phone. So the good news and then the bad news. So I got a new phone. So one thing that's important to me is that the phone works with iSync.
Okay. Yeah.
And so there's only certain brands that they support, and sometimes... I was at the end of my Verizon contract.
Okay.
And they have new every two, and I'm like, okay, I looked through the list of phones. You know, there's lots of different brands. But then I finally zeroed in on one that is compatible with iSync, at least partially.
All right.
And that's the, so now they call it the Krazer.
Okay.
Like a razor, but K-R-Z-R.
Yeah.
K-1-M. So, you know, I get the phone, they ship it to, you know, work in a couple of days, and everything went along. Now, you know, the first annoyance was they said, oh, I'm sorry, your old plan isn't compatible with this phone, which was a $34.99 a month plan.
Okay.
They're like, the $39.95 plan is compatible with your phone. I'm like,
naturally. Okay. Yes.
Of course, we get a corporate discount, so it kind of works out. So I'm like, okay, whatever. So I get the phone. You know, it's styling. So I had a V710, which when I researched it was one of the better Bluetooth-enabled or somewhat Bluetooth-enabled
right.
cellular phones. So I get this thing. So the good news is that, first off, it's styling. If you see this thing, it is a pretty neat-looking phone. Razor-like, but a little thinner, a little smaller.
Okay.
So here's the good things they did. So one, if you remember, I had the connector problem on my old phone.
Right.
This has a mini USB port, and you can charge using a mini USB cable.
That's
very
right.
Nice.
Just like the Razr.
Okay.
That's smart. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So like the Razr, if people have a Razr, they'll, you know, I don't have, now I have one.
Right.
Or at least
that's
a variation.
Right.
Now the other thing was that the Bluetooth is not crippled on this. So it's like awesome. You know, you can surf it with you know, the Bluetooth capabilities of your Mac or your PC. You can put files on there, take them off. So very nice. You can put in a, you know, micro SD card or whatever they call it. I think micro SD is one of the names for it. You know, so I put in an extra memory card. You can store things on that. So that's the good news. But then I started exploring more and more, and here's the bad news. So one, this contract stuff. Now, like you, I like the Bluetooth modem access.
Yeah.
Now, it's called Express Network. At least that's Verizon called it.
Sure.
Now, it was never something that was officially supported. You could just kind of do it. If you knew how to set up your dialer, you could dial in and, you know, get a fairly high-speed Bluetooth connection. It took off of your minutes, which I thought that's fair. Okay. And I'm even looking on my new contract, and it says Express Network, Premium Network Service Access, $0.00. My interpretation of that is that it's built in, and I get it.
Okay.
Well, as I, you know, so I had my dialing script. I had to find a newer dialing script.
Sure.
And I'm dialing in, and first off, now the one thing that, you know, kind of pegs the geek meter is that apparently they changed their authentication scheme with the PPP dialer. It doesn't do CHAP anymore, it does PAP.
Okay.
So you have to dig into the system, and I think you have to go to ETC, PPPD, I'll link to, you know, the information about this, but you have to basically say, don't do CHAP and don't do these other things, do PAP.
All right.
So finally, I'm like, oh, okay, I fixed that, because it would kick me off. Then,
once
I finally got it dialing in, I would dial in, it'd give me an IP address, and then after about 10 seconds, it kicked me off. It disconnected me. I'm like, what the heck is going on? So I surf more and more, and I find out that apparently this thing that worked on the old phone doesn't work on the new phone, because the new phone is not only RTT1X, but it's also EVDO.
Oh,
and that's
really?
The excuse for it.
Oh, that's
so it does
fast.
Both.
Oh, that's good, though.
Yeah, so I guess it could do either one. And
okay.
So I go online, and I look in the Verizon help, and they're like, oh, if you have this phone, you have to purchase the broadband access option. Now, I already had this on my contract. So I look online to get more information. And to their credit, they have a setup utility. So rather than setting up the dialer manually, they'll give you a utility that does a very nice job of setting up the MAT networking to log in using the #777 and all that stuff. So nice work on that. But then you have to pay extra. Now, how much would you pay for occasional access to broadband access, Dave?
Well, I have my Trio through Singular.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
We know that with the iPhone, essentially, that's it's $20 a month. With my Trio, I actually pay more than that. And for those of you that think that the iPhone calling plans are expensive, they're not.
Uh-huh.
They're just expensive compared to regular voice plans. But for an unlimited data plan, which is what I have on my Trio, I pay... I believe it's $39.95. It may be $34.95. It's either $35 or $40 a month. I think it's $40 though. So there you go. So I'd say $40 a month is what I'd expect to pay.
Oh no. So in addition to the plan now, which is a $39.95 minus the corporate discount, they want you to pay not $40, not $50, but it's $59.99 a month.
For unlimited, but that's EVDO. See, that's way faster than what I have.
But still, even if I only use it for, so the prior usage where, you know, we may use it like, you know, at the chaos that is Macworld when you can't get a Wi-Fi connection.
Yeah.
It's not something I used all the time, but to all of a sudden go from taking from my built-in minutes to $60 a month, I don't know what they're on, but I want some of it. I mean, that is just, or what planet are they living on? That is just.
Well, they're on the EVDO planet, man. I actually understand this now because that's a pretty fast connection. I remember talking to Dan East of Future Sonics.
Uh-huh.
He was in his car doing a video iChat connection to me over his EVDO connection. So it's okay. Fast, it's snappy, and Verizon is very protective of it. In fact, I'm surprised that they're letting you do it with the phone. That is relatively new from what I understand, which is cool. Well,
they are, as long as I pay $60 more.
Well, do you have to pay? Do you have to pay the $60, or can you do a lesser amount for a limited plan as opposed to an unlimited plan?
And that's, you know, I saw no option. It's just $60 bucks a month. No, really? I'd be willing to pay maybe, you know, $5, you know, for, you know, a certain, or take it for my existing minutes. Now that I have more minutes because they forced me into a more expensive plan. So that really, that got me cheesed because it's, again, it's listed on my contract, Express Network, premium network service access, $0.00. To me, that's not the same as $60 a month.
No, that's so actually issue. $60 different.
Yes. Okay. So anyway, so that was the one thing about the phone. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, the phone is, you know, great quality, lots of new features. Like, you know, you can put MP3s on it.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing that they did that really got me. Ringtone. So on the old phone, you could copy over MP3. And now that you can surf the file system, oh, cool. I'm like, okay, I'll put a ringtone on here. And they have a directory called ringtones. I'm like, okay, well, I'll copy over the MP3 or the MID file or whatever. And it doesn't appear in my list of ringtones. I'm like, that's really weird. It redirects it to this other directory called sound.
Huh.
So I'm like, okay, let me see, you know, let me go online. And people are like, oh, well, here, you email yourself a sound at your phone number at vzwpix.com, which I guess is their multimedia
address. Yeah,
there's another one, VText, I think, for text messages. So I'm like, okay, let me try that. I still don't get an option to add it as a ringtone. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I go online, do a little bit more research. And here's the thing that really, really got me. So then I'm like, you know, let me research, you know, why this is such a problem. So I go to Motorola. They make something called Phone Tools 4. And here's the clue here. Which Phone Tools 4 from Motorola says you can do things like synchronize, personalize ringtones, images, video, message, blah, blah. But then here's this phrase that caught my eye on the Motorola page. Note, if you are a Verizon customer, all multimedia and internet connection features in this software will be disabled due to carrier request.
Nice.
Please contact your service provider for further information. The further information being, we want to squeeze you for more money. So
right.
To me, I mean, they already had a class action suit with the V710 and Verizon because they crippled the Bluetooth. Are they going for this again?
Of course they are. That's Verizon.
You know,
it's the way they
can't
go.
I,
That's how
I mean,
they roll.
If I'm savvy enough to know how to copy, you know, a file over to the phone, can't I make it a ringtone? Do I have to pay you for it? Because everything else on the phone is fine. I can take pictures. I can take movies. You can put music on there. It's like not that ringtones are, you know, the end all be all to me.
Right.
So those are my two gripes, but the one is just that they disabled something that worked before.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of crummy.
Yeah. All right.
So, you know, guys, just, you know, accommodate the geeks. Let us, if we know how to manipulate the phone, don't cripple it too much. So it was almost like one step forward, two steps back. So end of rant. I'm going to write them a nice letter and see if they can do something nice to me. And for the most part, I like the new phone. I've had it for, you know, a few days, and it seems to work good, and it works with iSync, which is great.
You could always trade it in and get an iPhone, which works with iSync. So,
this one does work with iSync, and that was the beautiful thing. When I synced it up, you know, it saw it through Bluetooth. It,
yep.
You know, synced up my contact list, and I'm very happy that it did that. So it doesn't do the calendar, though, but not that I use my phone for the calendar feature.
Really? I know people.
No, I use my palm.
I know people with razors that sync iCal to their phone.
Well, I'm not them, so.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
But
so
I think it would work. So.
Yeah. So yeah. So Verizon, you're getting better, but you know.
Yeah.
Few things that got me. So on to rant. Unless you got a follow-up.
I have something
rant.
Geek. No. We'll actually go to this printer issue and then we'll do the printer issue and then the location thing. How are we going to do this? Let's do the location thing because I like this better, and we're running out of time, I think. Okay, so Dave writes in and says, I have an interesting challenge. I hope you or some of your listeners are up for it. I'm looking simply for a way in which a printer can default based on the network I'm using. In other words, I go to work, it connects automatically to the wireless network at work, and bam, as soon as I go to print something, it automatically defaults to print to the work printer, not the home printer that I had printed to last night if I use the last printer used setting. Then when I return home, reopen my MacBook, when it connects to my home wireless network, my printer default resets to the home printer. I'm looking for the most efficient and least geeky way of changing it. If I have to manually run an Apple script each time, in other words, I might as well just change the printer when I go to print. It would take just as long. Would love to have your hear your ideas or those of your listeners. Now, when I saw this, I thought, perfect, geek challenge. John and I then are running through the show notes or the show agenda before the show. And then it hit me. Wait a minute. This is like my rant about the location manager. And
that's what I was going to suggest. I thought the location manager that handles, you know, different network configurations, I thought it may be smart enough to do that sort of thing.
But it used to be in OS 9, right? But it's not in OS 10. Hmm. And when I ranted about this the last time, several of you wrote in and said, but Dave, you're missing out on Location X. And it's actually at homepage.mac.com/location manager, of all places, but we'll put a link in the show notes. And this will actually do everything that that Dave asks for here and more. So I think that's the answer. If anyone has another idea, then that's not a bad option. But Location X, I believe, will do all of it. And frankly, I don't know why I haven't installed Location X, because I want all of the things that it does. So I'm putting this on my list for tomorrow. So yeah, that's Location X. Let's go into Bob's thing here, because this is kind of cool. You know what? How are we doing on time? I know I'm all over the place here. Yeah, all right, we'll do Bob.
Hey, John and Dave. This is Bob Bierbauer in Charlotte, North Carolina. Started listening to your podcast recently, and I was actually just listening to it while I was painting my living room, and got to thinking that you might be able to help me out with a little problem I've been having. I recently purchased an OWC Mercury Elite Pro Aluminum FireWire 800 1 terabyte drive, which is basically two 500 megabyte drives in a stripe array. I'd like to break. I was originally using it as a for data purposes, and now I'd like to start using it for backup. So for obvious reasons, I'd like to break that that stripe array, and either start using it as a mirrored array or just as two single 500 megabyte drives. OWC does have a utility on their website to break the array. Unfortunately, it only works on PPC, the older Macs. There's no universal. They've said for quite a while now that Oxford is working on a universal version of the firmware, but it hasn't come out, and I was just wondering if you knew of any other options to break that down. And also, I got to thinking too that I have boot camp on my computer with a Windows, so maybe there's a Windows version that I could use to break it. If I'd love to hear your ideas on it, and my email is
all right. So this is interesting, and John, we were talking about this before. The first thought when you hear that you want to break a RAID is go to Disk Utility.
Disk Utility, of course, because that lets you set up various levels of RAID. But then when I mentioned that, you did a little more digging, and I guess the problem is that, well, the thing is you can have RAID implemented by multiple things. You could have software RAID, like Disk Utility, or you can have hardware RAID, which, as far as we could tell, that's what this drive is doing.
Right.
So Disk Utility is not going to be able to break it as he's putting it. And I was suggesting to break it, either put it on a busy highway or toss it out of, you know, probably 3 or 4 story building.
That's right.
No. Yeah. But anyway, so that's the problem. So Disk Utility, I guess, will always see this as a single drive, because you have to defer. And then I guess that's the question, is how do you manipulate the RAID firmware or controller inside of the drive? And I guess that's what some of these utilities that I believe you came up with, or he came up with.
Yeah, well, he found the one at OWC's site, which we'll link to, which does it. It'll do exactly this. Essentially, from what I could tell, it just uploads a new firmware to the drive mechanism. Now, note that doing any of this will render all of the data that's on the drives useless. Mm-hmm. You'll need to reformat them, but it will do what he wants. It'll, quote unquote, break the RAID or split that up. And really, it's just reprogramming the RAID controller on the in the enclosure and saying, okay, we don't want it striped anymore. We want it either mirrored or no RAID. Just give me two drives and I'll deal with them as I see fit. But Bob answered his own question. The Windows thing, of course, there's a Windows utility. And I believe we found it for you at FireWire Depot at fwdepot.com, or at least it's linked from there. And we'll put that link in the show notes too. You need to be very careful when you're doing this that you're picking the right chipset for the RAID controller that's in that in that device. Presumably, the updater utilities will be smart enough to pull it first and say, okay, is this the right chipset? You know, do I have the right file to update this? But don't rely on that as the end-all, be-all. Check it. Confirm it as best you can that, yes, you're doing the right thing. And you can usually see the chipset. Disk utility may even show it to you if you go to get info on the drive. It may show you what the chipset is on that FireWire thing. Or actually, the Apple System Profiler may show you that too. And so you want to check that. And even, I don't know if it'll void the warranty, but opening the case as a last resort and physically looking at it, it's going to be OX9 something, presumably, because it's that Oxford chipset that they have there that they use at OWC. So,
yep,
that's my thought.
Another option,
yep,
which we kicked around here. Now, this is only if you want to be a manly man.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And what you do is you get something. Well, one option, I guess, is to get another case and to liberate one of the drives out of the case. Now, that's expensive.
Oh, that's true.
But then something that both you and I, and this is where, you know, we're getting into
Peg's the geek meter.
And also just the manly man one is that they have newer tech makes a nice thing that both you and I, Dave, checked out. And I think we're both very pleased with it. But it's only a temporary solution. But it's the USB 2.0 universal drive adapter. And what this is a cable, which, as the name implies, you know, on one end is USB 2.0. And on the other end, it plugs into a variety of different drive types. SATA, you know, ATA, 2.5-inch, 3.5-inch drives. The thing is, it's just a cable connected to the raw drive.
Right.
So,
well, it's got a chipset in it. I mean, it does all the magic. Yeah. But
what I mean is it's probably not for permanent installation.
No.
Is that you don't want a drive sitting on a table somewhere or on a piece of paper with this cable connected to it. You know, at the very least, if you're going to have the drive out of its enclosure and put it somewhere, you know, put down an insulator, you know, piece of paper or something. But this is a temporary means. Now, I suppose you could use this cable and build a case around it, but then you might as well just get a nice case.
Yeah, but it's only chipset. $25.
Ah, okay.
Right, so
hey,
maybe
you know,
if you're
into crafting your own case.
Yeah.
But it's a wonderful thing, especially for quick and dirty, or, you know, if you got a drive failing and you just don't have time or don't have the resources to build a case, this is a wonderful adapter, and it's great for I've lent it to a few friends who had panic situations where, or just, you know, temporarily where they had to pull a drive out of a machine, do a full backup of it, and then that's it, they're done.
Yeah.
So they make a nice product for that.
That's it. That's and actually, it's also from OWC.
Okay.
I think, right?
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
I think OWC sells drives too and enclosures.
Yeah. Well, he bought his drive from OWC. That's why I said it's also from OWC. So, why is the band so quiet? That's odd. They're not usually that quiet.
There we go.
Yeah, but it's not where I would expect it to be. Anyway, so that's it. We've used up more than enough time, I think, tonight, John.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun to be back all day. You know, I was thinking, I got to go through all this email for the show and get everything ready. Once I did that and poured through the, you know, however many thousands of emails there were and sorted through the show notes, as soon as I had the show ready, I was totally stoked to get up here tonight and do this. It's actually really nice to be back. Now, I did think about one thing. And I'll pose this to you as a logic question. Mm-hmm. The show really could just be show number 6 now, couldn't it?
I don't think so. I think you're off a little bit there.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Because if you look at the show number, I believe that's show number 6.
I think it may be 7.
Oh, you're right.
You got the
last show.
Back to binary school.
Last show
you,
was show
boy.
Number 6. You're right. It's show number 7.
Oh man. Hey, that's why I went to. That's why I got my computer science degree. I can do binary.
You can. Yeah.
Yeah, you were only one off.
How could I be one off? How did I get that wrong? That's just.
You're on vacation, man. I guess
that's it. I'm still in vacation mode. All right. Let's see. iPhone Alley, of course, is Michael Johnston's site. He has been the one who converted this to AAC for you, who will have converted this to AAC. I don't know how to do that because it will happen after I say it, but before most of you hear it. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, iPhoneAlley.com. Also a new site as part of the Backbeat Media Network, and we're happy to have him. So
cool.
Yeah. The Podcast and New Media Expo is September 28th through 30th.
A quickie here. Yeah. Now, of course, Digital Life is, you know, I'd like to go to that show if I can, but I can't this time. But
yeah.
If you go to Digital Life, now just between me and you, the listener, if you go there and you provide, I think it's a source code, Insider, you can get not a free exhibit pass, but a discount. If there's, they sent me codes before, so they may have a code for free exhibit pass. I think it makes it to like $6 or something like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
So anyway, so Insider, shh, don't tell.
Okay, but you just told them all. I have no idea what next week will be. Cashfly Hosting is where you will have downloaded the show. And the podcast marketplace this month has the A5 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, BB Edit from Barebone Software, Page Sender from Smile on my Mac. And I believe we're out of here. And I don't know why.
I believe you're right.
Quiet. Yeah, I know. It's been a long day, but it's good to be back.
Yeah.
Always
yeah,
good.
I mean, the listener feedback just got me stoked, too. I mean, we
there it is. Why did it burst in?
And on your questions, because, you know, if we didn't have your questions, then we'd have to do more work.
We'd have to do more work. Yeah, thanks for all your help. Oh. You know.
Don't get caught.
Made up.